is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And tonight, we're going to celebrate the life of Nancy Reagan. And to do that, one must celebrate the marriage of the Reagans. And so I wanted to begin the only way we could begin here. And we looked through all kinds of things. We were looking for the very best one thing. And that appeared in the form of a column by George Will. And so I'm going to read it, and then we'll hear in this half hour from Nancy Reagan, from Hal Linden, reading some of those remarkable love letters written between these two, more from Ron to Nancy because he traveled so much. And if this was a story of anything, it was one of the great love stories. And here on Our American Stories, we don't do a lot of politics, but my goodness, what a marriage. And here's how George Will started his column. They were just four words, but they denoted something that led to a wonderful swerve in world history. They were words Ronald Reagan repeatedly used when referring to something that happened long before he spoke his most famous four words, "Tear down this wall." The other four words describe the most important event in his eventful life, an event without which Reagan probably would never have been in a position to bring down that Berlin Wall. Then along came Nancy. If she had not come along, he would not have come to the place he now occupies in history and in the hearts of his countrymen. When filling out forms that ask if one is married, many people perfunctorily check that box. The Reagans should have put not a check mark, but an exclamation point. They were the most married couple imaginable. Ronald was a reproach to every husband who does not write love notes to his wife as they sit together in evening repose. It was a remarkable woman who could elicit such private devotion from a public man with presidential preoccupations. Reagan's strength was reflected in his paternal cheerfulness, which flowed from his marriage. Politics requires the patience, endurance, and serenity that a happy marriage can confer. In a democracy, politics is a team sport. Parties are teams. Congressional caucuses are teams. Campaigns are teams. But often the most important team is the smallest, a harmonious marriage. The presidency has had three especially history-shaping partnerships: Abigail and John Adams, Dolly and James Madison, Nancy and Ronald Reagan. Much, but not too much, has been made of Nancy's protectiveness, her steely devotion to her husband's interests. With her in mind, one occasionally wonders whether the reason most societies have refused to allow women in combat is not that women are too frail for combat, but that they are too fierce for it. They would not obey the rules. Ronald Reagan was a friendly man who used friendliness as a buffer, keeping the world at a distance from his sphere of privacy. He had one true friend. He married her. She understood his amiable propensity for thinking the best of everybody, a mistake she did not make. Her cool public persona and occasionally icy decisiveness sometimes obscured her warmth, her capacity for fun, and her sly wit. She revealed the latter, for example, when describing a problem of Hollywood manners. "What should you do," she asked, "when you are invited to the home of an actor or director for a private screening of his newest movie, and the movie is dreadful? What do you say to your anxious host when he asks your opinion of his handiwork?" Nancy impishly explained, "You fix your host with an earnest gaze and exclaim, 'You've done it again.'" Her husband was not the only master politician living on the second floor of the White House. Nancy bore the brunt of much criticism from people who were inclined but reluctant to assail her husband. She did not enjoy these slings and arrows, but she was shrewd enough to be stoical about her role as alternative target. Today, in the midst of an unusually unseemly political season, it is salutary to remember that Nancy was faulted for what some considered her excessive interest in decorum and elegance in public life. Now she goes to a grave on a hill where she joins the love of her life. Atop that hill sits the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Library. Emerson said that any institution is the lengthening shadow of a man. This library is the lengthening shadow of the woman who channeled through it her devotion that was undimmed through 12 years without her husband. He spoke often of America as a shining city on a hill, words first used long ago to describe the American aspiration at a time when the nascent nation was a few hardy people on the continent's rocky Atlantic shore. The hill to which Nancy now goes overlooks the sun-dappled Pacific shore of a nation grown great not just in size but in moral stature because of its fidelity to principles that the Reagans defended together. For generations to come, Americans will continue to climb that hill in Simi Valley to renew their devotion to the nation and to one another, moved by the luminous example of two people who changed the world as and because they moved through it as one. This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Nancy herself, a really remarkable interview and segment that Katie Couric, of all people, did with her. It was beautiful. Katie did a marvelous job, and we're going to hear about that. And here's some of those love letters. Nancy Reagan, celebrated here on All American Stories.
Like campfires? How about a campfire atmosphere with friends and brought to your ears wherever you are? That's what we do at Our American Stories. A show that tells great American stories of love, final thoughts before dying, funny stories about first jobs, this day in history, American dreams and marriages, and so much more. And then here's your stories on these big topics live every weeknight. Or listen online at ouramericannetwork.org. We'll hope you join the campfire and call in with your stories.
Are you tired of all the talk about politics? How about talking about paychecks? Because that's what the Job Creators Network does. It's the voice of real job creators that's been missing. Led by Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus, over 50 job creators across the country are members.
Home Depot, if we started it today, we could never have succeeded with today's regulations.
Your voice is needed. If you're a job creator and interested in learning more, visit jobcreatorsnetwork.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, and we're celebrating the life of Nancy Reagan, and you cannot do that without celebrating the life and the marriage of Nancy and Ronald Reagan. And just on a personal note, it's just one of those things where, you know, if you were close to that family or felt close to them, and I did, my little daughter, my little girl Reagan was named after Ronald Reagan, and my wife was pregnant when he died. So boy or girl, our little girl or little boy would have been named Reagan. And on the inscription on my ring, as my wife had written the words that Nancy had written to Ronald, "My life began when I met you." And for any of us who believe this about our spouses and hold that dear, Democrat, Republican, this doesn't matter. The love they had was beautiful, and you saw it, well, through all the tributes this weekend. And one of the best I'd ever seen was by Katie Couric on the Today Show. Nancy had taken all of her love letters, all the ones that Ronnie had written for her, and she brought them to the library and ultimately published them. And Katie did a beautiful job working through those letters, working through Nancy's story. And so we wanted to play you a bit of that. Of all the things we'd seen, imagine that. George Will and Katie Couric did the best jobs. And that's a testimony to what love can do to bring people that different in political opinions and outlooks together to agree on something violently. Here's Couric describing how Nancy met Ronald on a blind date. Nancy says Ronnie never talked about himself once.
Ronald Reagan and Nancy Davis met on a blind date of sorts, choreographed by a Hollywood producer.
What was it that attracted you to him?
Oh, he was unlike any actor I had ever met. Never talked about himself or his next picture or his last picture, ever.
What did he talk about?
He talked about the Civil War. He talked about horses. But he never talked about himself. Ever, ever.
An actor who doesn't talk about himself, that's a unicorn.
Yeah.
And Hengler knows he was an actor. And I know I studied a bit myself. And that's, well, that's just unheard of. Couric describes their wedding. Nancy says getting married made her the happiest girl in the world.
The couple was married at the Little Brown Church in Studio City, California on March 4th, 1952.
I think I was born to be married.
Really?
I think I was born married. I was the happiest girl in the world when I became we. I love that. I love everything about marriage.
Here's Couric describing how Reagan, Ronald, would write to Nancy from lonely hotel rooms across the country. Actor Hal Linden reads one of those letters to Nancy.
But life as newlyweds was difficult. Reagan frequently traveled for movie roles and TV shows. He wrote his new bride from lonely hotel rooms across the country, and his loving letters
kept them close, like this one, read by actor Hal Linden.
Sunday, March 20th, 1955. My darling, it's time to move on to the next town now, and every move is a step toward home and you. I love you very much, and I don't even mind that life made me wait so long to find you. The waiting only made the finding sweeter. I love you, Ronnie.
Ronnie wrote beautiful letters. Beautiful.
Nancy says the letters made her feel excited, and we hear another one of those letters here.
Tell me about how excited you would get when you saw one in your mailbox or delivered to you.
Well, we were just married, and I, you know, being apart was terrible. So, of course, I was excited.
Holidays were always marked with a special letter or card. This one written on their 11th wedding anniversary.
My darling, this is really just an in-between day. It is a day on which I love you 365 days more than I did a year ago, and 365 less than I will a year from now. All my love, your husband.
I know people reading this probably sigh on occasion and think, oh, if I'd only gotten one letter like this, much less, hundreds.
I know. I've had some men come up to me and say, well, you really ruined it with me and my wife.
Sure did. Ronald's letters to Nancy went on to inspire men all over the country to write love letters to their wives as well. Nancy says the letters showed people a side of her husband that they didn't know was there.
And in fact, some of your friends say for the first time they've gotten lovely letters from their husband.
Yeah, I have a friend who, they were celebrating their anniversary and she got a letter from her husband.
You say that of all your possessions, this is what you really value the most.
Oh, yes, and that's why I feel so funny about giving them up.
The letters have all been donated by Mrs. Reagan to the Presidential Library. She felt it was a way for people to see the more private side of Ronald Reagan.
They're just warm, and there's a lot of humor in them. And they show a side of Ronnie, and that's in all the mail that I've gotten. Everybody mentions this, that they now see a side of him that they never knew was there.
Kirk then asked Nancy about people who would criticize the president and the first lady's close affection. Nancy says she was nothing other than blessed.
In fact, over the years, the Reagans were sometimes scrutinized because of their deep affection for one another.
People often talked about your adoring gaze, and when President Reagan would talk, you would always look at him lovingly.
I don't know what they expected me to do. Count the house? Of course I looked at him.
For the last 10 years, Mrs. Reagan has been living what she has called the long goodbye. But she's been able to look back and find comfort in the memories.
We've had a great life, a great life. And I was very blessed to find him. I really was.
You know, we can all hope, we guys who are listening, that that's all what our wives and our families will say when we've passed. Kirk tells us that Nancy didn't like to read the letters out loud to people, with one exception. Here, at the end of this, again, excellent piece by Katie Kirk, is Nancy.
A lifetime of love letters, all handwritten to Nancy by her husband. It was difficult for Mrs. Reagan to read them in front of anyone else, but one particular letter, written by Ronald Reagan in 1981 on their 29th anniversary, just after they moved into the White House, was a letter she was willing to share.
Dear First Lady, as President of the United States, it's my honor and privilege to cite you for service above and beyond the call of duty, and that you have made one man, me, the most happy man in the world for 29 years. Nancy Davis then went on to bring him happiness for the next 29 years as Nancy Davis Reagan, for which she has received and will continue to receive his undying devotion forever and ever. She's done this in spite of the fact that he still can't find the words to tell her how lost he would be without her. He sits in the Oval Office from which he can see, if he scooches down, her window and feels warm all over just knowing she's there. The above is the statement of the man who benefited from her act of heroism. The below is his signature, Ronald Reagan, President of the United States. P.S. I love and adore you.
And I wanted to read one that I picked out from my wife's book. She keeps this close to her. And this is dated February 14th, 1977. Dear St. Valentine, I'm writing to you about a beautiful young lady who has been in the household for 25 years now. I have a request to make of you, but before doing so, feel you should know more about her. For one thing, she has two hearts, her own and mine. I'm not complaining. I gave her mine willingly, and like it right where it is. Her name is Nancy, but for some time now, I've called her Mommy, and don't believe I could change. My request of you is, could you, on the day of St. Valentine's, whisper in her ear that someone loves her very much, and more each day. Also tell her this someone would run down like a dollar clock without her, so she must always stay where she is. Then tell her, if she wants to know who that someone is, to just turn her head to the left. I'll be across the room waiting to see if you told her. If you'll do this for me, I'll be happy knowing that she knows I love her with all of my heart. Thank you. Someone.
Believe me, I've got a case.
And we'll leave with Ronald Reagan's favorite song. This is Frank Sinatra. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories, the life of Nancy Reagan, the marriage of Ronald and Nancy Reagan. A great one, and good marriages we should all strive for.
Some lessons from her.
As you follow the presidential campaign, do you find yourself longing for a statesman and not just another politician? The people at Hillsdale College show what it takes in their latest free online course, Winston Churchill and Statesmanship. Our good friend Larry Arne, president of Hillsdale College, is a leading expert on Winston Churchill. This fascinating study examines Churchill's life, weaving history and political philosophy together in a course that will help you understand how and why Churchill was the greatest person of the 20th century. The course teaches how the duty of a statesman points upwards towards something outside of itself. You can access these excellent free online classes at hillsdale.edu. Look for the online courses at the top of the page. Hillsdale College has been pursuing the truth and defending liberty since 1844, and this course will help you do so as well. Learn how the virtues of Winston Churchill can impact your life and the life of our nation. Enroll today for free by going to hillsdale.edu. And look for online courses at the top of the page.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The funeral for former First Lady Nancy Reagan will take place Friday at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. The White House says First Lady Michelle Obama will attend. Mrs. Reagan, who died Sunday of congestive heart failure, will be buried next to her husband at the library. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg doesn't mean business when it comes to the 2016 election, after all. The billionaire Democrat-turned-Republican-turned-Democrat-turned-Independent says he won't run for president. He's concerned a third-party independent bid would hand the White House to Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. Virginia would be allowed to force condemned inmates to die in the electric chair under a bill approved today by the state Senate. Under current law, Virginia gives inmates the choice of lethal injection or electrocution. The bill would allow the state to use the electric chair if lethal injection drugs are unavailable. This is SRN News.
The following is a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I had numerous credit cards, and I was struggling with paying them off, so I made the call.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-758-5360.
The people at Trinity are very friendly. They will do whatever you need them to do in order for you to feel better about being in a very difficult place.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-758-5360.
Professional chefs at fine restaurants know that the secret to juicier and more succulent food is intense heat. The intense heat sears the food and locks in flavor. Solaire Infrared Grills gives you that high heat. Now you can produce the same delicious food served at high-end restaurants right in your own backyard. No matter what meat, veggies, or fruit you're grilling, it's going to taste great. Learn more about American-made Solaire Infrared Grills at besthotgrill.com. besthotgrill.com.
Campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year, in addition to the emotional stress on employees and their families. That's why Famous Footwear is committed to raising funds to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in the March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And now we bring you the story of an incredible 20-year-old named Tremeka Pope. Tremeka became a worldwide sensation with coverage in places like MTV and People magazine, but not for what, well, folks usually get coverage for, doing crazy or really weird things. She became one because of the life she's lived, the road she decided to travel. Homeless much of her life in the south side of Chicago, Tremeka became pregnant going into her freshman year of high school and gave birth just 3 days before she was supposed to start school. Earlier today, our field correspondent Alex Cortez was fortunate enough to speak with Tremeka about her life story, and this is a good one. And she told him about all the thoughts going through her head at that moment.
My mom told me God don't make no mistakes. He's the creator. And it was a time when I was like, I'm not going to be able to do nothing in my life. Like, I have this baby and I'm going to be on my own. But my mom, she was always there to just help build my spirit and let me know that I wasn't alone. God was always here. My baby is a blessing and I should look at her as a blessing, because honestly, without her, I know I would have worked hard, but without her, I wouldn't probably work as hard as I did having her. So I really appreciate that, and that the fact that I did keep her, because she should bring so much joy in my life. And every time I look at her, I just want to set a great example for her. And I just want her to be better than me and provide her with a life that I wasn't open to or I had a chance to experience. I just want better for her.
Wow. Her decision to choose life was made, but she still faced fears about what would come next.
I was really scared. I thought I wasn't going to make it as far as I did. I knew I was going to be judged. Everybody's going to talk about me and say, oh, she's a freshman. She got a baby. She only 16. Oh, my God.
And then Tremeka told Alex that she was beyond surprised that her fears did not become a reality.
It came out way different. Like, it was the total opposite of everything that I thought was going to happen to me as being a teen mom when I entered high school.
What do you mean by that? What happened differently?
My first week, I started school 2 months later because I was on homebound. And I had a cesarean, so I wasn't able to go back. I wasn't able to start school when everyone else was. And when I came, it was like the first week there, everybody knew who I was. They was like, oh, you went to Will's Prep, didn't you? They were like, you was the girl who graduated as valedictorian. They were like, oh, you got the baby. How is your baby now? And I'm like, oh, my, how you know all this? Like, this is my first day here. They've been in, others been in school for about 2 months now, and I'm just now coming, and everybody know who I am. And then the first week I went homecoming, and I was like, how?
Well, Tramika clearly has a healthy self-confidence, but she got a heck of a lot of support along the way.
It was a lot of them helping me, and I appreciated that because I couldn't do it on my own. I could, but I wouldn't be as far as I am without the support system that I have. And my family, they're so willing to help. And my teachers at school, they was willing to help when times when I needed to stay after school. I was allowed to bring her to school with me when she was at practice with me. When we was learning, she would sit on the staff. My coaches would watch her, or they'll sit with her while we was practicing. And it was like everyone was willing to help and pitch in, which really benefited me in so many ways.
And Tramika ended up graduating valedictorian in her high school, too. Remarkable. The American people were so moved by Tramika's story that they donated $610,000 in scholarships for her to attend college. Here's Tramika shocked by all of the attention her story received.
My librarian, she was actually showing me, and I was like, she was like, girl, you on BET? They got you over at Africa. And I'm like, what? How? They were like, yo, it moves people. It's just, it's sure a sign of there's no excuse to why you can't achieve what you set your mind to. And I was so surprised. I was like, how? Like, I just worked hard and did what I was supposed to do to make sure I was being a good mom and wanting better for not only myself, but my child as well. And she was just saying, you're an inspiration. Like, seeing something like that, it just, it made me happy to know that I can help make change, because I'm one of the people, I'm a very people's person. I love helping out others. And I said, one day I'm going to be in somebody's history book. I want to make change. And to see that, it just gave me more hope to want to see in life and make change.
Oh boy, she made change in one life already. Her babies. In addition to her God, we asked Tramika about her other great influence in her life, her mom, who has been through it all with her, from the streets to center stage.
She's doing the best she can, and I really applaud her for that, because she set her dreams aside to take care of her children. And a lot of parents, they don't really do that. They don't put their kids first. And I feel like I really appreciate my mom doing that, because she make us a priority, and it helps me as a parent as well, because I know I want to put my child first before anything. And for her to do it, raising 9 children, and I have 1, and for her to be the person that she is and how wonderful she is in the world today, I look up to that, and I want to see myself similar to her.
Tramika's story has touched millions, but it seems her example has touched someone even closer to home, her own father.
My dad, he has a disorder. He's and it can be hard for us to really, you know, spend as much time as we want with him, or really get the chance to be with him how we are with our mom. But he's around, and I can say my father, he tries to help out as much as he can, and he do support my child. Like, times when I was in high school and I couldn't take her to school, he was more willing to take her. He would pick her up, bring her home. And I enjoyed that, because me, when I was younger, he wasn't around. But him being involved in my daughter's life, I really appreciate that, because I feel like she needs that male father figure for someone to be there for her like that.
Well, good for you, Tramika. And what a story. And it shows, well, so much about her choice and the generosity of the American people, the way they reached out to her. I mean, over $600,000 in donations. Because, my goodness, she just had some courage and exhibited it and did something, well, selfless, deeply selfless. Tramika is now in college at Western Illinois University, and she's trying to figure out her major. I'm confident, I think everyone here and and our set is confident that she'll be just fine. And she'll have a bright future ahead of her, no matter what she chooses. This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And these are the kind of stories we bring you, folks. You're not going to hear this on every other dial on the radio spectrum. You won't hear it. And we want to hear your stories. So if you know stories like Tremika's, if you are a child now and alive because of a choice like this, we want to hear that story. Some people are in crossroads at their lives, and they choose life. And when they do, something really remarkable happens. Again, we want to hear those stories. Go to ouramericanstories.org and post them. And soon we'll have a call-in number for you to call in and just leave the story up to about 5 minutes. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. More after these messages.
American Stories brings to you the Wall Street Journal Story of the Day with captivating interviews.
There is a kind of replicator staring us in the face which can spread from brain to brain.
Music.
One day in 1992, These Are Days came on the rock station. The song with Natalie Merchant singing had just been released and captured my existence.
Intriguing profiles.
If you get to know someone in a war, they might well die much sooner than you'd prefer.
Sports, movie reviews, and so much more. From what's trending in the culinary world to style and fashion. Travel, art, real estate, and careers are just some of the stories you'll hear from the Wall Street Journal. On Our American Stories, Wall Street Journal, Story of the Day.
The Wall Street Journal, America's Journal, America's Stories. You'll find it all and more at The Wall Street Journal. Subscribe today at WSJ.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
I'm Jesse Gonzalez, Vice President at Kmart. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies in the United States, or that survivors can face a lifetime of serious health problems? But you can help. Join me in Kmart for the March for Babies Walk. We'll work together to raise funds for research and programs that help the marginalized fight premature birth and birth defects and improve the health of moms and babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And now it's time for our This Day in History segment, brought to us by Hillsdale College, the best place in America to start study anything about American history, literature, philosophy, all the things that matter in life. And if you can't go to Hillsdale, Hillsdale will come to you through their wildly popular online courses. Check them out at hillsdale.edu. And on this day in history, a great American was born. And what you're about to hear is an adaptation of Carl Zinnmeister's story about her in his terrific book, The Almanac of American Philanthropy. Take it away.
To collect a small fortune of over
all of this fame,
75 years,
but she wasn't an actress,
the indignities of segregation,
an athlete, or a billionaire.
A woman who
and she decided,
and yet she inspired millions.
She reçoit tous ses admirateurs,
and over $1 billion in charity by her example.
I'd just like to say that if this country had more people like you,
of what we could all be,
and we'd be even greater than we are.
Of how happy we could all be.
And I'm very proud of you, and I thank you so much.
If we choose to live like her.
For what you've done and for the example you set.
Her name.
For people all across America.
Osceola McCarty.
Osceola McCarty.
Osceola McCarty. Osceola McCarty.
Osceola McCarty.
Osceola McCarty.
Osceola was born in 1908. And it was a raw start. She was conceived when her mother was raped on a wooden path in rural Mississippi. Raised by her grandmother and aunt, Osceola would come home from elementary school in iron clothes, stashing the money she earned in her doll buggy. The three women relied completely on each other. And when the aunt returned from a hospitalization unable to walk, Osceola dropped out of sixth grade to care for her and take up her work as a washerwoman.
We washed in a cast iron wash pot and a tin tub and throwing the pot and boiling, wrench them into the line, hang them up, or we starch them and carry them onto the line, hang them up.
She would never return to school, saying,
I knew there were people who didn't have to work as hard as I did, but it didn't make me feel sad. I love to work, and when you love to do anything, those things don't bother you.
We worked all the time, never was without work, plenty of work to do. I worked all night sometime and all day, and then the next day. Work. And when I get right over in the next evening, well, I pull my shade and blind down and crawl over in the bed, get ready and go to bed and sleep 4 days and get up and go right back at it.
She did try an automatic washer and dryer in the 1960s, but found that the washing machine didn't rinse enough, and the dryer turned the whites yellow. The machine was almost immediately retired, and she went back to her old school ways, saying,
I love the bright fire, wrenching the wet clean cloth, white shirts shining on the line.
And her customers could tell it. Paul Laughlin wrote, I know one person who still has several shirts that were last cleaned almost 2 years ago by Miss McCarty. He says that he does not intend to wear them. He just takes them out periodically to look at them and enjoy the crisp fabric and its scent. McCarty was a walking lesson that all work can be performed with dignity and infused with quality.
Even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper. Go on out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well.
Reverend Martin Luther King's street sweeper and McCarty the washerwoman weren't paid much.
We would charge much. Sometimes it'd be $2, sometimes $1.50.
Only spending what little she needed to survive, Osceola saved the rest. The money in her doll buggy just kept piling up. And when it started piling over, she decided to open a bank account and described the scene this way.
I didn't know how to do it. Went there myself. Didn't tell them I was going.
You have it in your mind, you're going to save something. You're going to save every time you get paid off.
She added,
it's not the ones that make the big money, but the ones who know how to save who get ahead. My secret was contentment. I was happy with what I had.
Osceola was happy working and saving until she was 87 years old, citing her belief that work is a blessing.
As long as I am living, I want to be working at something. Just because I am old doesn't mean I can't work.
At 87, she had $280,000 in that bank account.
This is the wash pot I bought and made all that money in.
And although she had stopped working, her money would just start working.
I had too much money, more than I ever knew. And I didn't have no sister, no brother, no children, and nobody. All my family was dead.
She would make complete strangers her relatives, donating $150,000 to create a scholarship for promising black students to attend the University of Southern Mississippi, a college education she herself wasn't able to pursue, and a college she wouldn't have been allowed to attend as a person of color.
Osceola McCarty shocked USM, Hattiesburg, and the nation when she recently revealed that she was giving USM $150,000 for standing in Osceola McCarty.
The college was just a few blocks from Osceola's home, and yet it seemed like a world away.
I had never been in the college, even on the ground, walked on the soil. I never had. Until then.
The first beneficiary of her gift, a Hattiesburg girl named Stephanie Bullock, was president of her senior class, but also had a twin brother, and not enough family income to send them both to college. With the scholarship, they now could, and Stephanie promptly adopted Osceola as a surrogate grandmother.
And I loved what she told one reporter when he said, Miss McCarty, why aren't you spending this on yourself? And she said, I am.
Her example inspired many more Americans to truly spend their money on themselves. 600 men and women made donations that more than tripled her original gift. And cable TV mogul Ted Turner decided, if that little woman can give away everything she has, then I can give a billion.
You know, some people didn't give nothing, and they didn't see it that way. But after they say, if I was a little washerwoman and could do that. Why? Give money. Why? Everybody else ought to be able to do it themselves. When it goes bad, that's the Lord testing you out. See how strong you are.
When I think of Miss Osceola McCarthy and the wonderful things she's done in her lifetime, the words of this song come to mind. Yes, they do. Thank you, Miss McCarthy.
This is Lee Habib. And great job on that, guys. Greg, just superb work. Osceola McCarthy, born on this day in history. And only in America does this story happen, folks. And this is an area that Arthur Brooks has written quite a bit about in the Wall Street Journal over the last decade. His book, his great book, Who Really Cares? About who gives away their money the most. And it's often the people with the least money. And in the end, she was right. She was helping herself. Osceola McCarthy, again, born on this day in history. This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And these are the kind of stories we love to bring to you that no one else on radio is bringing to you. And again, brought to you by Hillsdale College. And if you can't get to Hillsdale, and my goodness, you should. By the way, I love going even though I hadn't gone as an undergraduate, because every time I go back, I learn something there. But you don't have to go to Michigan. Hillsdale can come to you. Go to hillsdale.edu and just check out their amazing online courses, which are available for free.
Show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign. Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And for the hour, we're going to talk about the life of Pat Conroy. And if you don't know him, you're going to when we're done, and you're going to like him. And he was a great American writer. The Great Santini and The Prince of Tides were turned into two of the finest movies about fathers and sons. And my goodness, Pat Conroy had a tough dad, a Marine Corps fighter pilot who, as he often said, was raised to be in war, but never got to fight in one. So the home front became a battlefield. And I think some of the most honest writing about craziness in family. And every family's got some crazy in it.
And father and son relationships are some of the toughest and the greatest writers have dug down deep into that well, from Arthur Miller straight to Bruce Springsteen. And I think it's what makes those guys all so good, and what brings them so close to their audience is the writing, honestly, about their fathers. Fathers they love and, in many respects, hate. And so I wanted to have you hear a little bit about Pat Conroy and his life. First, here's Pat talking about his mom.
The reading life was inspired, without question, by my mother. And I did not realize this, that when my mother read to me and my brothers and sisters every day before we went to bed at night, I did not realize that would become my writing voice, the voice I would hear when I'd go to a table. That would become the voice I'd read to my own children, when I taught in school, when I read something to my wife. I did not understand she was plotting this thing to take over my life. Because one thing about my mother, she made me obsessed with books. And not only obsessed, I lived through books. And not living through books was not living itself. And my mother, we're not sure she got out of high school, but she taught herself, and she ate up every single library of every town we ever entered. No one ever checked out more books than Peg Conroy.
Again, his mom never goes to college, inspires her son to read, and he becomes one of America's finest novelists. So never take for granted what influence, folks, you have as parents on your kids' lives. Books were life-changing to Pat Conroy. Take a listen to this.
The books are life-changing. I try to write about the life-changing books. I try to write the books that led me to others, and that is one of the great gifts of books. You read one, and it leads you on a pathway that you did not know you would take. When I went to England, I did not have any idea. By turning a corner, I would read the complete works of Dickens. Turn another corner, I'd read the complete works of Thackeray. Look across the street, and Yeats would flower open for me. Jane Austen. I mean, it occurred to me so many times that I had to become aware of just what would be happening at the time it happened. But that was one of the glories of living to me, not one of the sorrows.
He tells a story here in this interview about how after one of his successful books, The Prince of Tides, which is really dark and really tough, and it's clearly about his family and craziness in his family, a smug, young, very seemingly happy couple comes up and, well, they seem to think that they're very different than the lives he's writing about. Listen to Pat Conroy's exchange with this one particular fellow.
Yeah, I think The Prince of Tides just came out. And he says, "Hey, man, your family's nuts, huh?" I said, "Yeah, pretty much so." He said, "Boy, you can sure tell it from reading that book." I said, "Yeah, you can." I said, "How's your family, pal?" And he looks at me and says, "Oh, my family's great, great." I said, "Now that we're having a conversation, let's be honest. How far do we have to go before we hit the first crazy in your family? Mom, dad, sister, brother, aunt." His wife broke and finally said, "His mother's nuts. She's completely nuts." And I said, "See what I mean?" I said, "Generally, it's not far from any of us. It's, you know, it's around the corner there. Sometimes in my family, it's much closer than I'm comfortable with."
Much closer. But that's the thing about writing and real writing. It makes us all feel less alone. So what would you like the fans to get out of their reading life? Take a listen.
I would like people, my readers, my fans, to get out of my reading life this. I would like them to see it as the beginning of a journey. I'd like them to see what happened to me in my journey. Because the one thing I can promise them, if they take it seriously, if they are serious readers, if they are serious imaginers, if they are serious thinkers, they don't know where this journey is going to end. It's a voyage of a lifetime. It'll end with my last conscious thought on Earth. It's taken me places I could not believe. I've traveled parts of the globe I would not be there except for reading. I've visited the graves of poets in Crete. I've visited Balzac's grave in France. I've gone to graves all over Europe just because I fell in love with these men and women who are no longer alive, who once filled my brain with utter wonder, who wanted me to write like them, who wanted me to make characters and build characters, invent cities, invent people. They were so magnificent, people would never be able to keep their hands off my books again, like these ones that went before me, like these writers who made up my reading life.
And you're listening to Pat Conroy, and we're spending an hour on this man's life because wait till you hear the audio to come. Talk about a storyteller, and when he opens up about the really difficult, difficult life with his father, well, there's a little bit of that in every father and son relationship, and some much more than we'd care to admit. And so when we come back, we're going to hear from the man who wrote The Great Santini, the man who wrote The Prince of Tides, and then the man who wrote his only piece of nonfiction that really hit the bestseller list, The Death of Santini, and that's the death of his father, when he really opened up and let it all out. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. We celebrate everything here, including great writing and great literature. More after this.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
We're the producers.
We're the producers.
At Our American Stories.
On Our American Network.
And we would like to hear your story.
If you or someone you know has an interesting story that you would like to share with America,
simply email us a picture and a paragraph.
A picture and a paragraph.
To your story at OurAmericanNetwork.org.
Just a picture and a paragraph?
Yep, that's all you need.
Did you or someone you know serve in the military?
Tell us about it.
Send a picture and a paragraph to
your story at OurAmericanNetwork.org.
Did you or someone you know have something dramatic happen?
We want to know about it.
Send a picture of yourself and a paragraph describing something that happened in your life that you would like to share with America
and the rest of the world.
Has someone ever done something for you that changed your life?
Share it with us.
Share it with us.
Share it with us.
Or just having a bad day?
We want to hear about it.
We want to hear about it.
Share your story with us on Our American Stories.
Your story is important to us
and our listeners.
To share your story,
simply email us a picture and a paragraph.
To your story at OurAmericanNetwork.org.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Holly Thomas, Group Vice President of Cause Marketing for Macy's. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. That's why Macy's is committed to raising funds through our employees, customers, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
In the tradition of Patton and MacArthur, Bull Meacham lived to be a soldier. But he didn't have a war, so he fought the world around him. They called him the Great Santini.
You may not have the privilege of serving under the meanest, toughest, screaming squadron commander in the Marine Corps. Me, has the Great Santini ever let his family down?
Yes!
You don't trust the Great Santini?
No!
I don't want you to consider me as just your commanding officer. I want you to look on me like I was God. To that special breed of sky devil known and feared throughout the world, Marines. Yeah! Now you're flying with Bull Meacham now. This is the eye of the storm. Welcome aboard.
He was a man of war, but it was a time of peace.
Hey, Dad, are you ever afraid when you fly?
Hell yes. That's what makes me so damn good.
And that's the trailer of the movie The Great Santini. And Robert Duvall was never better. He may have been as good in The Apostle and several other films, including The Godfather. But I think he'd tell you, Bull Meacham, that character. Well, you saw his character in Apocalypse, too, where he played that crazy, crazy soldier sitting in the middle of the killing fields of Vietnam and screaming, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. But let me tell you, Bull Meacham, what a character. And we're talking about Pat Conroy and his books. And Pat Conroy died over the weekend. Nancy Reagan passed too. And we're covering his story today. And in his words, and before we do that, I want to play a couple of scenes for The Great Santini. And if you have not seen this movie, rent it. And you'll love it. And Blythe Danner is amazing in this. And that's Gwyneth Paltrow's mom. Quite an actress. And then rent Prince of Tides, and you'll have really gotten a glimpse of the life of Pat Conroy and the work of Pat Conroy, because those two movies actually and genuinely reflect the character of the novels. And then it'll make you want to read those books, if you're a reader, and even if you're not, because you will not be able to put them down. Here is Robert Duvall, Bull Meacham, the Great Santini, giving a pep talk to his soldiers in that movie.
Kitchen on deck. Seats, gentlemen. Morning. You may not have the privilege of serving under the meanest, toughest, screaming squadron commander in the Marine Corps. Me. Now, I don't want you to consider me as just your commanding officer. I want you to look on me like I was, well, God. If I say something, you pretend it's coming from the burning bush. Now, we're members of the proudest, most elite group of fighting men in the history of the world. We are Marines, Marine Corps fighter pilots. We have no other function. That is our mission. And you're either going to hack it or pack it. Do you read me? Within 30 days, I'm going to lead the toughest flying of sons of bitches in the world. The 312 Werewolf Squadron will make history, or it will die trying. Now you're flying with Bull Meacham now, and I kid you not, this is the eye of the storm. Welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard.
Carry on.
And just moments later in this movie and in the book, we see this. This man could not treat his family any differently than he could treat his soldiers. And this was, in the end, what the book was really about. Let's take a listen to Duvall instilling some discipline into his kids.
Okay, Hogs. I've listened to you bellyache about moving to this new town. This said bellyaching will end as of 15:30 hours. Will not affect the morale of the squadron henceforth. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir.
I know it's rough to leave your friends and move every year. But you are Marine kids and can chew nails while other kids are sucking cotton candy. And you're Meachums. Meacham's a thoroughbred, a winner all the way. Gets the best grades, wins the most awards, and excels in sports. Meacham never gives up. I want you Hogs to let this bird know you're here. I want these crackers to wake up and wonder what the hell blew in a town. Okay, Hogs, by nightfall, I want this camp in inspection order. Do you read me loud and clear?
Yes, sir.
I said, do you read me loud and clear?
Yes, sir.
Outstanding. Sergeant, dismiss the troops.
Dismiss.
He does remind me of someone from the movies, but it's not Rhett Butler.
No, it's not. And then you'd start to see, of course, there's a little bit of charm there, and you're laughing. But then that military discipline turns ugly in the movie, and it becomes demented, and in the end, warped, and it destroys the family. And Pat Conroy was one of those little boys listening to those kind of lectures. And then the question Pat had in his head, what do I do with this life and this knowledge? And he decides to, well, write about it, and write about it, and write about it. And interestingly enough, though his dad was mean to him and his dad beat his wife and his dad was tough on the family and broke the family up and drove the family crazy, he still loved his dad. And in a fascinating discussion that he had with Ann Patchett in Nashville in 2013, and Ann is another terrific writer, he was with her to talk about the book The Death of Santini. Because in the end, when his dad died, well, he needed to write about him, honestly. And this was the hardest book he ever had to write, and it was a piece of nonfiction. This great fiction writer, now finally able to tell the real, unbridled truth about his dad now that he passed. And Conroy tells the story about what it was like to tour with his dad when the books The Great Santini and The Prince of Tides were, well, making him a famous author around this country.
What would happen if you and I were talking here tonight? You would see a hulking figure in the background that would appear on stage. He'd break in and figure out a way to come out and sit there to join the conversation. And eventually, he would take over the conversation. But I got moved when The Great Santini came out, and he hated that book with his body and soul. He hated everything about it. He hated my portrait of him as a father, as a husband, as a Marine. He loathed that book. But I was attacked by his family enough that as I was signing The Great Santini, and you know those first books you just mentioned, you know, I had, I think, 12 intergalactic sales during that season. But I noticed Dad would come and sit beside me. And he got in the habit of signing my books with me. Now, for Dad, with, you know, he would sign this way with The Great Santini. I certainly hope you enjoy my son's work of fiction. And he would underline fiction. He'd underline fiction 5 or 6 times. And he said, my son certainly has an extraordinary imagination. And he would sign, oh, lovable, likable Don Conroy, The Great Santini himself. This is kind of normal for The Great Santini. He did it for every book I wrote after that.
Here's more about his dad.
One time I had a big signing in Charlotte, 4 or 5 hours. Dad was beside me the whole time. And I got to translate this way, and it may be wrong. I thought of my father, who was an inarticulate man with love. It was his way of telling me he loved me. Because when the Prince of Tides came out, and I said, Dad, what are you signing the Prince of Tides for? And my father, in his great modesty, said, I am the seed, son. I am the source. And I said, Dad, you sound like it's a cattle food shop. But it was his way of participating in a creative event that I came to appreciate very much.
What compassion, and you feel it bleeding through the pages, even as he's the toughest critic of his dad, to love a man, to try and understand why that man did what he did. That's why Pat Conroy's work is loved. I love that he said, my dad was an articulate man, but inarticulate with love. Do we know a few fathers like that? Come on. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. The life, the work of a great writer, Pat Conroy, author of The Great Santini, The Prince of Tides, and two great movies, by the way. This is Our American Stories. More on Pat Conroy, who passed away this weekend.
As a child, I went through that over and over and over again. He actually did commit suicide and saw that happen. And at that point in my life, I really went south quick. I started turning to drugs.
That's Mike Iglehart. He ended up in prison. And in prison, he found his father in heaven and turned his life around. He's now the biological father of two children with his wife, Terry. And they're also entrusted with the lives of 10 other children, all through the Palmer Home for Children. 10 children who were just like him, abused, abandoned, or neglected.
A man that had no father for his whole entire life and ran fatherless forever is now being able to be a father to the fatherless. I told him all. I said, man, I really wish there was a place like that that somebody would have put me in when I was a kid that was an opportunity like that.
Thankfully, there is a loving home for these children at the Palmer Home. 126 children are there today, and they can change so many more children's lives with your support. Consider making a donation today at palmerhome.org.
With SRN News, I'm Patrick Foss. Republican Senators Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin are once again asking the State Department staffer who helped set up Hillary Clinton's private email server to appear before lawmakers. The lawmakers have asked Brian Pagliotto to appear before them to discuss the server and to provide documents and communications about Clinton's personal email account. Marco Rubio's campaign is sending an automated phone call to Michigan primary voters in which Mitt Romney urges them not to vote for Donald Trump. In the robocall, Romney says he's convinced that Trump would lose to Hillary Clinton in November. The U.S. Secret Service says a man who tried to breach the White House fence was tackled and arrested before he got on the executive mansion's grounds. And U.S. stocks closed mostly higher on Wall Street as another jump in the price of crude oil brought energy companies back in favor. More details at SRNnews.com.
I just feel like something's missing.
I know. What we had was so big.
And warm. And bright.
And yellow.
Oh, I really miss the sun.
No sun? No problem. Centrum, the most trusted multivitamins, now have more of the vitamin D3 you need. Get the vitamin D you could be missing this winter with Centrum Multivitamins. Now our highest level of D3 ever.
Is negative content or comments on the web affecting your personal or professional reputation? Unfavorable comments, embarrassing pictures, videos, legal documents, and bad tweets can ruin your personal life, your career, or your business. Reputation.com can protect your good name. It's easy to squash the unfair attacks with our patented system. Call right now for a free expert reputation analysis. Call 800-651-4888. 800-651-4888.
Campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sam Nussbaum with the Anthem Foundation. Premature birth is the leading cause of death of babies and disabilities for children. That's why we support the March of Dimes to help mothers have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Join us in supporting cutting-edge research, treatment and outreach to help moms during their pregnancy and give every baby a healthy start in life. Learn how you can help at marchofdimes.org.
Nothing we can say is gonna change anything now. I believe in the morning from St. Mary's Gate. We wouldn't change this thing even if we could somehow. Cause the darkness of this house has got the best of us. There's a darkness in this town that's got us too. But they can't touch me now, and you can't touch me now. They ain't gonna do to me what I watch them do to you. So say goodbye, it's Independence Day.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. That's Bruce Springsteen singing a goodbye song to his father. It's what's drawn a lot of people to his music. It is certainly what drew people to Arthur Miller's work, the father-son relationships and the strains, and it is most certainly what drew people to Pat Conroy's work, The Great Santini and The Prince of Tides in particular, and of course his nonfiction work, The Death of Santini, which was about his father, and so were the other two, in very clear and stark terms. And Pat grew up in Georgia, but he was a Marine brat. So he grew up on bases all over the country. And his father, as we learned early on in this hour, was a man who was built for war, but never got to really fight one throughout the childhood of young Pat Conroy. And so the home field, battlefield, was what Pat experienced with his dad. And so we pick it up with his conversation with Ann Patchett in Nashville in 2013. Did Dad change because of the fiction? This became the question Ann Patchett had. Did Dad learn something reading about himself through his son's eyes?
You know, I've never seen a guy change because of a work of fiction. But I think Dad made an effort, and my mother divorcing him at the same time. And, you know, my father, now here's my father. Okay, son, and I went to talk with Dad, and I said, Dad, and he's weeping, which Dad never did. He's weeping, oh, I've got divorce papers from your mother. And he's crying. We're at Manuel's Tavern in Atlanta. He's weeping and crying. And I said, Dad, do you see what you did wrong now? Do you understand what you did wrong? And poor Dad going, yeah. And I said, what do you think it was, Dad? He said, I was way too easy on your mother and the kids. I should have cracked down harder. And I look at him from across the table. I said, Dad, Caligula couldn't have cracked that heart. And he said, no, this is... He goes to the judge. My mother has given the judge a copy of The Great Santini and said, it's all here, Your Honor. My mother and sister testified on scenes in The Great Santini I had invented. I had made up. So, and Dad gets up in court, and this is in Beaufort, South Carolina, he says, you cannot divorce me, Judge. And so the judge, rather surprised, said, oh, really, why not, Colonel? Because I'm a Roman Catholic. And when the family hear this, we all... And he said, I was married forever. And this court has no power to divorce me and Peg. He was divorced about 5 minutes later. But it was Dad. It was that, you know, that Marine, hard-charging guy that never changed.
That was Dad. And you hear that love in his voice, and you hear the audience laughing at something very tragic, and not a silly laugh. And that's a unique gift. And when you read a Pat Conroy book, you laugh a lot at the tragedy. He does not play the victim card, and he has no countenance for it. None. What was his first memory?
My first memory was of being in a high chair. And I was in a base in El Toro. And I remember my father beating my mother, backhanding her to the floor, with her trying to stab him with a butcher knife. And I remember my face, my whole baby face, inflamed. And I had... You know, I didn't know how to talk then. And what it was inflamed with, I later realized, was hatred. And I didn't know there was an English word for hatred. So I didn't have to go back for that. That is always with me. That lives with me every day. I don't have to do research on it, study it. It is there.
It is there. Here he is talking with Ann Patchett about the process he went through with his editors when he was submitting The Great Santini. And the editors just couldn't believe that a man this tough and this mean existed. And, well, Pat had to take some liberties. Let's take a listen to this exchange.
I would write her these things, and instantly she would write back, Pat, no one will believe this character. He's too mean. He's too horrible. You know, he's not believable, and we will not publish your book. So I kept trying to add scenes, and I got my brothers and sisters together, and I said, did Dad ever screw up and treat us nicely when we were growing up? And I was very serious. And we would think, and, you know, we were seven of us then, and we'd think, and I'd think, and finally came up, no. I said, you get us a hot dog? Nah. Take us out for an ice cream cone? Nah. Take us to a ball game? Nah. We could not come up with anything. But Ann Barrett would not believe a guy was knocking us all over the place, hitting us, beating my mother to a pulp. She would not believe it. So I cut that out, and I made up stories that I'd like Dad to have done. He gives his son a flight jacket on his birthday. And I thought, what a nice thing that would have been. So I enjoyed writing that scene that never happened. Then his daughter goes to her first prom, and Dad has roses sent to the house. And so when later I asked Dad, did you like those scenes, Dad? Oh, God, I love those scenes. You know, what a great guy I was. And I said, Dad, I made them up. You didn't do any of it. Anything you did nice in the book, I invented.
Ouch. But they still stayed together, this father and son team. And it turns out that Pat Conroy, well, when he wrote Prince of Tides, it got a little rougher on Dad, on the father figure. And then when his dad died, well, Pat Conroy was actually finally able to tell the full and complete truth. And when we come back, you're going to hear Pat Conroy talk, well, as starkly as one can about his father, and as humorously, because if you're laughing now, you're going to laugh even harder. The stories he tells are priceless. They're tragic. They're sad. They're funny. Conroy knew how to walk that walk because he knew no other. He loved his dad. He didn't judge his dad. He just spoke honestly and plainly about life as he saw it. This is Lee Habib celebrating the life, the work, the fiction, the brutal, beautiful honesty of Pat Conroy, writing about his beloved dad, whom he hated and loved simultaneously. More after these messages.
Tired of all the talk about politics? How about talking about paychecks? Because that's what the Job Creators Network does. It's the voice of real job creators that's been missing. Led by Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus, over 50 job creators across the country are members.
Home Depot, if we started it today, we could never have succeeded with today's regulations.
Your voice is needed. If you're a job creator and interested in learning more, visit jobcreatorsnetwork.com.
Like campfires? How about a campfire atmosphere with friends and brought to your ears wherever you are? That's what we do at Our American Stories. A show that tells great American stories of love, final thoughts before dying, funny stories about first jobs, this day in history, American dreams and marriages, and so much more. And then here's your stories on these big topics live every weeknight. Or listen online at ouramericannetwork.org. We'll hope you join the campfire and call in with your stories.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
Hi, I'm Rick Osick with Famous Footwear. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies? That's why we support the March of Dimes in the fight against premature birth. Join us in supporting cutting-edge research, treatment programs, and outreach to help moms have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Learn how you can help save babies' lives at marchofdimes.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, and for the hour, the life of Pat Conroy. If you don't know his work, pick it up. Go to Amazon. Get The Great Santini, and then read The Death of Santini. One, a work of fiction about his dad, and then when he finally dies, a work of nonfiction. You cannot put down either. And they're funny. They're wickedly funny. They're not silly. And Conroy died this past weekend. And so we're celebrating his life here on Our American Stories. We love music. We love the arts. We've done a tremendous hour on Martin Scorsese, Al Pacino, and so many other creative types. And we'll be doing many more on Literary Lions as we go as well. And let's go back to that Nashville room in 2013 with Ann Patchett, the great writer, interviewing one of her literary heroes, Pat Conroy. We just heard that story about his dad, and Ann Patchett asks a tough question, and here's Pat's rather, I think, sad answer.
So, do you think you're putting it to rest with this book?
Of course not. I will bring havoc. You know, I am worried that I'll bring havoc unto my deathbed. The Conroys can't have a wedding, a funeral. We can't do anything normally. None of us.
And he says it just so straightforwardly, and he doesn't hate his family. He just, this is the way it is. And we all know families like that, by the way. You get them together, and oh my goodness, there goes the wedding, there goes the baseball game, there goes everything. And yet they still get together. So here's a ridiculously funny and sad story right out of The Death of Santini about his father dying.
When Dad was actually dying, we split time up with the six kids.
Right.
And, you know, six-hour intervals. Because we wanted to give Dad a good death. We wanted to, you know, take care of Dad and make sure he was comfortable, make sure he knew he was loved, and all this stuff. And I came over, you know, for a morning shift, and I hear my sister Carol, who's a poet in New York, was articulate, you know, of all of us. And I hear her screaming at Dad. And I walk inside, and Dad is going to be dead in 3 days. I mean, it's soon. And Carol is screaming this, Ann. You got to tell me you love me, Dad. You got to tell me you love me. And she has tears streaming down his face. You got to tell me you're proud of me, Dad. Proud of my life as a poet. You know, I've made a life as a poet. And it's been hard. It's been in New York City. And I've done it by myself. But you got to tell me you love me. And you got to tell me you're proud of me before you die. Now, this is moving to me as anything can be. So I go in, and of course, I'm the oldest of seven, and I was the protector, the lookout, the Rottweiler for the other kids. So I as Carol said later, he wagged the finger of paternalism. And so I wagged it at her. She comes out and she's just a wreck. And she's had a lifetime of mental illness. She's had a lifetime of estrangement from the family. And she comes out and I said, Carol, it's very important for you to know something. Dad is dying. He's not going deaf. You don't have to scream at him. And Carol is a wreck. And she says, Pat, he's never told me he loves me in his whole life. He never told me he's proud of me in his whole life. I've written poems. I've dedicated poems to Dad over and over again. I've done everything I could to make him proud of me. I've needed him my whole life just to tell me he loved me. And does he ever tell you that? And I said, Carol, to tell you the truth, every day the phone rings. And I pick it up, and it's Dad. It's been going on for 30 years. And the phone rings, and it's Dad on the phone. And I said, hey, Dad, how you doing? And he said, Pat, I just have to tell you this. I love you so much, I cannot even tell you or express it in words. And, Pat, I am so proud of your writing. It makes me want to fall to my knees in gratitude for the day that you were born. And I only wish I could feel the same way about Carol.
He finishes this story.
So I said, Carol, I'm joking. Dad cannot tell us he loves us. He cannot tell us, you know, he's proud of us. It's the great Santini dying in there. It's not Bill Cosby, okay? We know that. We got to learn how to translate Dad. And, you know, the translation is, it isn't that hard. Dad has tried to show us he's loved us in his own way. Well, I get Carol to come back in. So we are sitting there in my redneck brother-in-law, Bobby Joe. Now, I ain't got to explain to no Tennessee audience what a redneck is, okay? But when I tell you Bobby Joe makes your relatives look like Rockefellers, and you cannot figure out who your brothers and sisters are going to marry. That is part of life, is most difficult. Bobby Joe comes in and is redneck as they come, and he looks over at my father and he goes, hey, old man, how you feeling? Dad would be dead in 2.5 days. I hear him say in a weakened voice, I love you, Bobby Joe. I'm proud of you, Bobby Joe. And my sister goes off like a Roman candle, and she goes for his throat with both hands, and both of us have to pull Carol off my dying father.
And that came out of The Death of Santini, this remarkable book that Ann Patchett was discussing with Pat Conroy. And here is Ann talking about her thoughts about Pat Conroy's book and this exchange.
But, Anne, this is the kind of thing that, you know, that haunts me and follows me and hunts me down, whether I want to or not.
This is so confusing, though, and this is your brilliance. You're making us laugh. You're making us laugh. I laughed my head off through this book, and it is a tragedy. I mean, it's the saddest book in the world, and I was gasping. I was laughing so hard.
See, Ann, you know, I cannot. See, and I, you know, I tell you, these are horrible stories. You know, when my brother, I had a brother commit suicide. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to us. He was the youngest brother. He was a paranoid schizophrenic. He leaps off a building, 14-story building, in Columbia, South Carolina, and he is a disaster, man. I mean, we have to bury him almost the next day because it's the middle of August, and his head is just, everything has come apart. And they scrape him up. And we've got to get this thing together. And my father, you know, and Dad, you know, he gets on the phone. I said, Dad, are you okay? And my father, again, is crying so hard. And he says to me, and this nearly broke my heart, Ann. He says, Pat, I lost my baby boy. You don't know what it's like to lose your baby.
And you don't. And then he was asked why he didn't write this book when he was young, this first raw piece of nonfiction. And he gave a great answer.
Okay, here's what would have happened. And I can answer this honestly, Ann. Father Jim is at the podium. We have come here to celebrate the life and death of Pat Conroy. He was killed by my brother, who is now in federal penitentiary. In a fit of rage. I could not have done it when I was younger. I was still too full of denial. I had to go through therapy. I had to find out things about myself I did not know. I'd have to find out things about myself I hated. And I couldn't have written it then.
The life of Pat Conroy, author of The Great Santini, author of The Prince of Tides, both terrific movies, by the way. If you're not a reader, watch the films. They capture it all, or as best as a film can. And he died this past weekend, and his last book, a piece of nonfiction called The Death of Santini, you can just read that alone and know everything. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. On this day, a great man of letters is celebrated.
It's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.